Welcome back to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. After my inexplicable absence last week, we're all together again, the whole editorial team, for our week in views. Joining me this week, we have Craig Chappell, our head of content, Daniel Griffiths, the editor, and Paige Cook, the deputy editor of the PG.biz site. Hi, folks. Welcome back. It's lovely to see you all.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the intro, Brian. Always a pleasure to see you.
And it's lovely to be back. After my weird exploration into the Scottish borders, I'm back at the heart of things, Edinburgh. The castle is right over there. It's tipping down with rain, so you know summer can only just be around the corner. But it's great to be back. So let's dive straight in. What have we been up to this week? Because it has been a heck of a week, let's be honest. Daniel, let's come to you first.
Yeah, it has been a hectic one. Highlight of the week this week for me was I was at the London Developer Conference yesterday, in fact, which is good, which is part of the formerly week-long, now kind of fortnight-long, drawn-out affair that is the London Games Fortnight.
London Games Fortnight.
That's not the official name. You know what? I'm not even sure what the official name is because it's so diverse and all-encompassing these days. But the thing yesterday was a nice thing in a place, Savoy Place. So it's a nice sit-down, chance to catch it with folks. Get out the house, see what the other side of my front door looks like for a change, get some fresh air and meet some people. So, yeah, it was really good. And, you know, lots of great people, lots of interesting meetings in amongst the talk of tax credits and other interesting stuff like that was plenty of hot AI chat and some neat snapshots of where the industry is and where we're all heading, which is always fun. People sticking their neck out and, you know, holding a finger in the wind and predicting the future, which is always good. But yeah, it was good. Lots to talk about whether AI is going to kill us all and how long we've got left. So yeah, it was great fun.
And indeed, if AI does kill us all, can you claim back on tax expenditure just to make sure that your human resources are being replaced most effectively?
If you get the right form.
Thank you so much, Daniel. I think you're going to have to take some expert advice. Unfortunately, that expert advice is now all from an AI. So I think this is only going one way. But that's great. Thank you, Daniel. Paige, how about yourself? Any opportunity to leave the office for you?
Nope. In my office, in my little chair. But yeah, just the usual from me this week. Lots of interviews and features up on the site, one of which I will come back to a little bit later to tell you some more about at the very end. And then in non-work related news, I started the Fallout series last night, the new TV show. I watched the first two episodes and it's very good. And I feel like everybody is now either re-downloading some kind of Fallout game or purchasing it. So
that's good to
win
hear.
All round for them, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a bit of a fan. I've been saving it for this weekend. So no spoilers, please. But I'm very, very glad to hear that you say that it's actually good. And I have been looking for a reason to go back to Fallout 3 since the last four or five times I completed it. And then, Craig, how about yourself?
Hello. So I've spent the week in Finland. We're out there a little bit earlier this year, so we've got Pocket Gamer Connects Helsinki in October. We wanted to get out there, see what's actually happening in the industry and get in before everybody goes away on their month-long holidays, which they're very famous for. And that was great. So I met loads of companies there. We had studio visits like Rovio, Metacore, Metaplay, Nitro Games. I feel like I spoke with almost everybody in the industry. I'll speak about some takeaways a bit more later, but that was good. And then what was really great about the trip is when I came back, I realized I was straight back in the UK where there were no trains running.
Welcome
so
home.
I couldn't get to the airport because there was a train strike. And all the way back, there was a signal failure. So you can't win.
Ouch.
In this country.
That it does make you appreciate coming home and you go, ah, fantastic, another 7-hour journey to get from the airport to my actual house. So welcome back.
Thank you.
And congratulations on making it back.
Thanks to the power of Bolt. this podcast is brought to you by them, otherwise I wouldn't be.
Did the sun set, Craig? Craig, did the sun set? Did the sun set and did the sun rise properly?
Oh, do you know what? It was quite bright quite early there. I think it did. Yes, it wasn't like 2 hours of sunlight or 10 a.m. and you can't see anything. It's proper springtime. They just had, I can't remember the word they used for it. They have a special word for when spring is coming, and so it gets sunny, and then suddenly it like snows again, and it's really cold winter, which is what happened the week before, or what happened last week. Massive, like 10 centimeters of snow. Which you couldn't see much of when we got there. But yeah,
well, at least the weather and the sun work properly over here. That's what I was saying. If nothing else does,
not anymore.
I was about to say we have a phrase for that in Scotland. It's called business as usual.
Yeah.
True that.
I just want to like get into plugs quickly. So on Tuesday. So stuff that's happening next week. I'll be doing a Digital Markets Act webinar. Going to be hosted by Raptor PR. It's going to include Quali, Stash and Zebedee. We're just going to do a breakdown of the DMA, what's going on and its impact. Registration's free, so please do take part. And then another plug, because why not? It's the start of the podcast. Dubai Game Expo Summit takes place May 1st and 2nd at the end of the month. So also busy preparing for that. So I'll be travelling there as well. Never stops. Might even be in Dubrovnik in a couple of weeks. We'll see. So yeah, there's lots going on.
The glamorous jet set lifestyle of the busy professional journalist. It just, you see folks, there is a career in games beyond the mere programming. Well, I'm very glad you made it back. I'm very glad you're here. And we're going to dive in to a run through of this week's headlines and news. So let's come back to you first, Daniel. What's been happening out there? What's been the buzz on the site?
I'll keep it pretty snappy. I picked out a whole bunch of stuff that caught my eye, made me smile effectively this week. I went through a Microsoft Saves the Day angle on the fact that Activision Blizzard games are set to return to China in a new NetEase deal. We spent, a year or so with dealing with the machinations of Activision Blizzard versus NetEase in China over the past year. The two of them had a fantastic deal. The Activision Blizzard games were present in China through under NetEase's wing, shall we say. Everyone's a winner. The pair of them fell out, couldn't get it together, and it's resulted in Activision Blizzard games being snatched out of the hands of players in China. So no one's happy. The players don't get to play their games. Activision Blizzard and NetEase miss out on millions. And despite multiple efforts for them to kiss and make up, one of them would always end up throwing a drink over the other one every time that they met. So to be honest, I'd kind of forgotten all about it. And then benevolent old Microsoft comes in and saves the day. So now that Activision Blizzard are part of Microsoft, Microsoft just snap their fingers, and they make the magic happen. So I love this one. I mean, coming from a long history where Microsoft was basically the man and was the evil thing, and the whole world choked under the yoke of Windows ME and Office 98, this new chill dad bod Microsoft is someone I'm really warming to. Whenever I say that, I kind of thinking of Phil Spencer. I just think he's the guy, and he's a man who's interchangeable with Bruce Campbell from the Evil Dead films for my mind. So that's why I like him even more. He's a man with a chainsaw for an arm. What's not to like? We should go and have a pint. I like to humanize these things because it makes them amusing and interesting for me. He's the guy that sorted out the toddlers, Actiblizz and Netties when they couldn't get it together. And he's made them everyone play nice. So, nasty Mike Ybarra has left the building. And the boogeyman of Bobby Kotick he's had his soul captured in a broken mirror. So it's all safe now. And Microsoft have made the magic happen. So the winner is the Chinese gamers that get to play Diablo Immortal all over again. So well done, Microsoft. Microsoft is a big friendly giant. Can anyone else relate to that?
I wonder if this deal is just NetEase just getting a better deal than they had before. I don't actually know the background of the... I can't remember the background of it. But I know, obviously, Tencent recently is trying to renegotiate some of their IP partnership deals to get... Because I think they're... I've got to rebotch the numbers. I think it was like 15-20% royalty fee. And then obviously you have to pay the platform fees as well. So I wonder if they just got it a lot less and now they're bringing the game back.
There's a little caveat in there that basically implies that Tencent games are coming to Xbox. Quite how that works and on what more favourable
NetEase games. Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. NetEase games.
Tencent that was come out about the IP partnership deals, and I wonder if just NetEase was doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah. There's Microsoft are bringing something else to the party. I feel that's made everyone smile and be friends again. Other stuff. What have I got? Squad Busters heads into soft launch. Supercell Squad Busters heads into soft launch, 23rd of April. And I'll be honest, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, right, wasn't it already in soft launch? So when you look at it, back on it, basically it had a 10-day beta in Canada back in February 23, over a year ago. Then it's been in beta in Canada, Mexico and Spain in May. That's over a year ago. And so now we're finally ready for prime time, only we're not. It's now into official soft launch at least. At last. But, you know, all this talk that they have of autonomy and freedom within Supercell and how they're all masters of their own destiny, it must be bloody frustrating not being able to get your fabulous game out there globally. But I'm pleased that it's slowly getting there. I just hope they don't kill it before people globally get to play it. But Supercell, isn't it? So anything could happen. But yeah, it's inching closer to allowing people around the world to play the game. We'll see what happens.
This is the one.
You reckon?
This is the one they'll release. Game number six. They'll do it. It might take a year. Whatever. I it looks great. I mean, they always kind of look pretty good. But then they just, like, they have games that most other companies would release. They're like, nah, it's not going to make us a billion. We'll move on to the next thing. I think this one, it looks great. It's the one.
Other stuff, I got a story out of the London Games Conference thing yesterday. Chris String, we did a really good talk at the start of the day yesterday, which was great. It was nothing that we hadn't heard before, but it was nice hearing it all in one place, basically. It told a really nice potted story of the post-pandemic boom and bust, really. And, you know, the elephant in the room is that there's a lot of pretty daft people out there. I think there's a lot of... The story goes that, you know, basically the games industry went so long banging on about how important it was. When the numbers and the graphs suddenly took a huge upturn, thanks to the pandemic and everyone being trapped in their houses, that I think they just thought that these graphs were just going to go on forever. So anybody who'd ever cleaned the toilet at Rovio could start their own company and get funding. Everyone gave themselves a massive pay rise, and what could go wrong? And as soon as lockdown finished, everyone decided that they wanted to go outside and play football again. So it's an interesting story. So yeah, Chris kind of summed it up very nicely. But yeah, it was good hearing it all in one place. And his predictions for the future, I thought, were pretty bang on. Steady away for 2024. Cross your fingers that the layoffs are over. And, you know, the return of investment should be coming before the end of the year. 2025 is going to be, all good, you know, he said optimistically. But yeah, it was a great talk and I thoroughly enjoyed that one.
I think we've seen a lot of VCs, well, I say a lot, there's a few. We've seen a few VCs raising money lately, whether that gets deployed soon. But Leighton Ventures raised $35 million. can't remember the other style off the top of my head. A16Z has obviously got their big fund. And there's Mika fund. That's 50 million. So there's hope for this year. I think the general thing that I'll go to later is still kind of like you say, survive to 25 is the quote. And then apparently next year it will be sunshine and rainbows. So
I like survive to 25. We'll that's amazing. Yeah, that's good. That'll catch on.
Yeah, that just seems to be the big, everyone's in survival mode. And they think next year will be a lot better.
Other stuff. I mean, it's a shame Aaron's not here. Aaron is our resident Nintendo expert. The 3DS store and the Wii U store, the online services for both of those consoles got switched off as recently as Tuesday night, frankly. So, I just was picturing the guy that turned his 3DS on Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, and said, which was like, huh? You know, where's all my stuff gone? But all good things come to an end. I never had a 3DS, but I had a DS for sure. And I remember being at the unveiling of the DS and being thoroughly unimpressed with it, if I'm honest. But that was pre-Nintendogs, of course. And once you've played Nintendogs on a DS, you've got to buy one. Soft spot, 3DS for me. And the Wii U, I borrowed a Wii U. I think I borrowed it from Games Master magazine, and it was still in its box with the intention of playing it over the weekend, but all it did was spend all weekend updating on my crappy internet and rewriting, getting set for an OS update. So I think by the time that finished, I had to return it on Monday morning, so I never got to play the Wii U. But yes, amazing that they've sustained those services for this long, and respect to them. For doing the right thing. I hope nobody was too upset this week when the online stores went down.
The Wii U, it ended up having some of the best games that you could get, really, really good games. But my God, I remember a similar situation to you. I opened it up and there were just massive issues with, you had to do a day one update to get the console to work. But the servers couldn't handle the people.
That's it. Yeah, it wasn't my crappy internet.
All at once, you couldn't actually download it.
Yeah, it was the fault was at their end. There's me remembering it wrong. Yeah, it was bar does not slide across the screen. Bar sits there doing nothing.
I spent days just trying to get it to work, and I also, the recommendation was you had to go in manually and configure your address and get it all to work. I was like, this can't be how a new console launches. And by the way, you had a rattle as well. So that was, it was an interesting console, but I guess you had to have that to get the Switch. So
I love it when everything retro is new again. So that's fantastic. Thank you, Daniel. That's brilliant. Paige, let's jump straight over to you.
So some news for me. I'll try and keep it a little bit snappy, but we had a story that was part of Data AI's weekly market insights, and this was the Dream Games Royal Match has smashed a new record. It's managed to go from earning $2 billion to $3 billion in the space of 5 months, which is just ridiculous. So the previous record holder was Clash of Clans, which took them 6 months. So it's not like it's, smashed it massively. It's like a month, but still it's there. So yeah, it took those 6 months to do the same leap. And then I think it was Roblox and Genshin Impact. It took them 7 months. So still, I don't really think it's anything to turn your nose up at, that 6 or 7 months to raise $1 billion. But it's just, really incredible for Dream Games that they've managed to do it in just 5 months. But now I'm kind of just curious of, can anybody do it in 4?
Well, Scopely is already saying, hold my beer.
Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I expect it will. But yeah, 4 months. And it's just going to be a competition from there. Who's going to do it in a month?
I'm intrigued by, Monopoly Go is going to get there. And it's going to be interesting to see when it does it. The other interesting thing I saw was that Margot Robbie's production company, after doing Barbie, is now the next thing they're doing is a Monopoly movie. So it's kind of what goes around comes around.
So aren't they doing a Sims movie as well?
Oh, I didn't know that. That'd be interesting.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
That'd be good. Yeah, that's that. It's yeah.
Is it a Sims movie just real life?
Yeah, I'm intrigued. If there isn't a scene with someone jumping in a pool and then someone deleting a ladder, then it's not a Sims movie.
As long as the whole thing comes with Simlish subtitles, I think we can all get on board with it.
Yeah, we'll have to keep our eyes peeled for that one. In other news, we had ByteDance profits have reportedly gone up by 60%, so that's surpassing their Chinese competitor Tencent. But, you know, I kind of can't help but think, you know, is this mostly just down to obviously TikTok? The figures sort of come in from anonymous individuals. I always love that. Just anonymous individuals, very mysterious. But they're people that are supposedly familiar with the matter, and they've sort of said that the sales have climbed from 80 billion to 120 billion. So it kind of seems that ByteDance is outperforming Tencent in terms of, you know, their growth and revenue profits. But it also kind of feels to me that, you know, are they not in different lanes at this point? You know, we know that ByteDance are obviously, you know, drawing back from their games, they're selling up their studios, and, you know, I think they kind of jumped into games and were like, oh no, actually this is quite difficult, so let's not do that and go back. So yeah, I'm not sure how much longer that comparison between the two is gonna really be there.
These stories are being geared up for if it gets banned in the US, right? I think it makes most of its money in, well, like a large portion, sorry, of its money in China, but it's obviously still a big loss if it goes.
Another one from me. So we've got Rainbow Six Mobile is sort of putting a pause to things a little bit. So the team have basically addressed that, you know, the game sort of, you know, it's been out for more than, I think it's more than like half a year now, but there's still quite a few problems. They've kind of come out and said, you know, we're proud of how it's shaping up, but there's definitely room for improvement. So they're putting a pause to things. There's going to be no new content. They're not adding any sort of additions in terms of, you know, new territories and things like that. So they've stated that, you know, it's just sort of the general stuff, fixing some bugs, some, you know, connectivity issues and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, I kind of feel like that's the right move. If your game isn't performing the way that it should be, don't roll out new content for it, just fix the game. And obviously Rainbow's been massively successful on console, but I don't quite think it's had the same sort of feel on mobile. So there's obviously something missing. So yeah, if they can get it sort of patched up and working how it should, I'll be intrigued to see if that makes people, you know, actually want to play it on mobile. But yeah, we'll see, and hopefully it pays off for them in the long run anyway.
Yeah, it's a hard-fought battle. Yeah, Battle Royale, FPS on mobile. It's even with a big name behind it, it's tricky. You're going to have a very slick game to compete, frankly.
Thank you very much, Paige. Some great pieces in there. Craig, let's move on to you.
So one of the big stories of the week is Miniclip has acquired Future Lab. So Miniclip, known for titles like 8-Ball Pool, Agario, and Subway Surfers after acquisitions, all under its banner. And Future Lab is known for its huge success with Power Wash Simulator for PC and console. It's previously been known for games like Velocity Ultra and Velocity 2X, but I think it's kind of got to the next level with Power Wash Simulator. Kind of, what? But yeah, great game. The deal basically brings Miniclip kind of solidly into the PC and console space. So previously it's obviously web and mobile, and hugely successful there. I think it's significant not just because it's a big M&A deal, one for the UK and Europe, and it seems like a pretty good acquisition, but it's another deal that shows the trend of publishers going cross-platform and try to reach players everywhere. And maybe also try to get away from some of the try to get away from the platform holders on mobile. To be clear, like, MediaClip hasn't said that, and I'm not saying that's specifically why they are doing it, but I think maybe the general trend of going cross-platform is kind of being boosted a bit by Apple and Google shenanigans. But yeah, MediaClip always kind of makes savvy deals, and I think the Future Lab acquisition is another smart buy for them.
Yeah, I think it was very interesting that if they're going to go into PC, this is an initial step, and it's a game, certainly with the Powerwash, it's a game that just feels like a good match for them. Like if they'd acquired some sort of Hellscape FPS type blood and gore type thing, it would have been a little bit curious, but it feels like a very natural way in. And it'd be interesting to see what comes next and how things develop.
And let's not forget, they're technically under the banner of Tencent as well.
Ah, yeah.
This is true. And it also opens up an entire world of power tools and DIY enthusiasts related games. So who knows? You know, we could see so many other, you know, mundane activities. It's not just power washing, but, you know, degrouting the bathroom. It's laying linoleum. You know, it's the opportunities are almost endless. Forgive me, as somebody who is equally handless with a hammer and a drill, I have no place to comment here. Please continue, Craig.
So elsewhere, we sorry, that's great. There will be games like that as well. But there probably already is. Like, there's,
if you look hard,
simulation games are so successful. It's
bound to be.
I'm going on a tangent now. I just find it amazing that people, like, you get like I don't know, farming simulator or bus simulator. It's like people that do that as their day job still like to do that as their relaxation. or anyone just likes to do these like kind of hardcore things as their relaxation. But maybe Powerwash.
I remember looking at Train Simulator and laughing and going, well, who's going to play that? That's ridiculous. And then the more I thought about it, the more I quite fancied it. So who knows? One day.
Oh, the gods. Yeah.
There's a new taxi one coming out. I don't know if it's just console, but it's like Taxi Simulator. So I wonder if like taxi drivers do, you know, a shift at work and then they go home and they're like, you know what, I'm going to play some Taxi Simulator after my shift.
I did see that. I think, yeah, it popped up on my YouTube. I was like, that looks good. That looks good. I want it. Yeah. Count me in.
Wasn't Crazy Taxi like a step in that direction?
Yeah, it's too crazy.
Admittedly, it's unlicensed taxi cab.
Non-crazy
taxi.
Yeah, far too
sensible taxi.
It's not a laughing matter driving a taxi. It's serious business. Get the knowledge, you know. But yeah, I want to do it. I want to do it all.
So, elsewhere, other news. So, we updated the soft launch list twice this week, actually. And the second big update came from after I'd been into Finland. So, there's quite a Finnish flavor. Everyone's telling me that they've got a game in soft launch. So, I added a bunch. So, we added Hype from the team formerly known as Frogmind, and they're also called Hype, same as their game, which is like a UGC focused game. We added Riftbusters from Phantom Game Labs. Interestingly, both studios are Supercell backed and they currently share an office. Phantom Game Labs is in the Hype office. We've also added, maybe a bit cheekily, but in advance, Supercell's own Squad Busters. So that comes out April 23rd. And a Mega Royale, which is a really interesting looking tower defense game that has merge and battle royale mechanics from a studio called Tower Pop. And that's led by key developers from Crazy Defense Heroes, which is another pretty successful,
I've got to see that.
Very successful game.
How does that work? Well, don't explain. I'll have a look. That sounds good.
It looks good. So you do your typical tower defense and then you can merge your, I guess, defensive towers together to battle like the hordes of enemies that kind of go through. And at the same time, you see at the top of the screen, so it's all portrait, you see 9 other players doing the same thing, and you can then do stuff in your game that impacts them, so it might bring out like a bigger enemy in all of their games, and it's basically last person standing wins.
Amazing.
It's just kind of another edge on it. It looks good.
If they can balance that right, that sounds great. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. We'll see. Soft launch. But yeah, good luck to them. And then we added loads more games. Joy City's Disney Railbreakers, Plarium's Elf Islands, Rollick's Punch Max, Tiny Rebel Games' Petaverse, and now there's about 45 games in the list. But if anyone out there listening wants us or thinks we should add a game on the list, please drop us a message and we'll absolutely take a look. So as part of this soft launch list, we always look at the entire list each time we update, and then we see if games have been cancelled. And one of them that looks like it's been shut down, but I don't think we've had the official word ourselves, is XCOM Legends. So apparently it only made last month, according to AppMagic estimates, $2,637. But obviously it's in soft launch, so technically that doesn't matter. It's obviously a low figure. But maybe that's not the metric they're looking at. But yeah, I think apparently on Reddit, players were saying that they were sent a message that the game's going to be shut down as of May 7th. I think it's no longer available on the app stores. And it was another IP, another big PC IP that companies trying to bring to mobile, and this time it's not really worked out.
Yeah, it used to be massive, but I'm going back, 20-something years, you know, it doesn't count for much really these days. It's not your guarantee of minting money, basically. To be fair,
the newer versions, new inverted commas, when did it come out? Like the remake, it was like, right, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. And then XCOM 2 is actually great. Enemy Unknown, I think, was the expansion on that, was even better. So it's really good. It has an audience. Just, I guess they couldn't translate it, perhaps. And elsewhere, last news, Roblox has partnered with PubMatic to power video ads. So what that means is the two have partnered up, and PubMatic will enable programmatic media buying of Roblox video ad inventory, with video ads going live in the game later this year. I think this is interesting because Roblox has never made a profit, despite the fact that in this press release, and probably on their previous financials, it says they have 71 million daily active users. So they're obviously not making enough from in-app purchases. They have done a lot of work with brands before, so this is perhaps an easier way to get, this is an easier way really to kind of get brands getting their name out there and I guess spending money with Roblox. Ads seems like an obvious long-term play, but it's a bit tricky because it's still a platform with a very large user base of players under 12. So I think limits on what you can advertise, and that'll probably spark some concerns among parents. Like, well, I know what game they're playing, but what ads might they see? And I guess you don't know.
So if I can jump in just really quickly there, Craig, so it is directly relevant to me. I have a 7-year-old who adores Roblox, and the age rating for the game, you know, is already making me question it. And I've already locked it down in terms of the content that he can see. But yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff out there in terms of the user-generated content that is clearly moderated, but is probably moderated by AI. There's a heck of a lot of stuff that I've caught my son playing that I wouldn't consider appropriate for a 7-year-old. So I think when the advertisers step in, it may force Roblox to really start looking more seriously at the content they're serving up to that massive under 12 audience. Because, all it takes is, a growing number of parents seeing adverts that they consider are appropriate for their under 4, under 5. And it could cause all sorts of harm to the platform. So it's going to be an interesting one to watch, but fingers crossed this is their opportunity to perhaps clean up their act.
It can be done. Like Game Loft with brands, I think, does very specific partnerships, kind of knowing like, well, we want to make sure that younger users are not going to see something that they shouldn't be seeing. So hopefully they'll take that approach and not just kind of accept like automatically any old company an ad. But I guess when it launches later this year, we'll see exactly how that works. But the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, everything has to have ads now, right? Like anything before that, even if you thought, or the company themselves says, we'll never do ads, Netflix, everything has to have an ad. And it made me think of Amazon. So now you have to pay, I think I might have said this the other week, now you have to pay extra to not have ads when you watch Amazon Prime Video. But it's particularly funny when I watched Invincible, great TV show. It starts now with a 30-second ad. And at the end of that ad, it says, this show is brought to you ad-free by Apex Legends. But I've just watched a 30-second ad I can't skip. It's not ad-free. What are you talking about?
It's I remember, do you remember when you used to go to America and you used to turn the TV on, flick through the hundreds of channels, watch the title sequence for something you actually wanted. Oh, it's the A-Team in the middle of the night. Brilliant. I'll watch that. And then they would have an ad break between the titles and the start of the show. And it would freak everybody out. Yeah. How long before we're getting ad breaks every 2 minutes and ad breaks every time somebody draws a breath, even on the services you pay for. Yeah. It's happening.
Oh my God. We're entering the era of hyper-casual TV. It's whether or not that's a bad thing. We shall leave for a future show. That's fantastic, Craig. Thank you so much. Now, we're going to dive into the Weekend Views section, and we're coming back to you first for this one, Paige.
Yeah, hopefully you guys won't hear the ice cream van that keeps deciding to go up and down my street whilst it's raining, so... Not sure how that works.
I love
but
ice cream. Yeah, so it's only ever good news.
I know, but it's raining. There's nobody out there. It's like, who are you expecting to want ice cream right now? But they're trying. That's the third time they've gone down the street. But yeah, my Week in Views is from an interview that went up yesterday. So back in January, I did an interview with a developer that's based in Kenya, and they released a game called Electric Blue Gecko Dash. That's a mouthful. And we've now sort of circled back around and we've spoke with the publishers of the game, but they're actually a conservation group. So basically their sort of mission is to highlight certain species that are endangered and perhaps aren't getting the conservation efforts that they should. So they'll pick an appropriate developer. They try and get someone that's, you know, maybe in the area that species lives in, or, you know, something that's very fitting, make a game and, you know, tell the stories of these animals in a way that is, you know, fun, but also kind of educational and kind of with the end goal of hopefully, you know, being able to save them. So yeah, the interview was just one of those really nice sort of feel good interviews because, you know, we sort of got an update on this game. They have 3 out at the moment, but the Gecko Dash one is their latest, and they kind of said that it was doing really well and it had actually reached, it was ranked number 1 for casual games on the Google Play Store in Kenya. So that's amazing, and obviously, you know, means people are playing it and also learning about this species that obviously needs help. So yeah, it was just really nice to do an interview like that. And if anybody still tells people that you can't learn from games and they can't do any good, then you can tell them that they're wrong.
That's pretty definitive, and I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Paige. Great. Craig, now you've brought quite a lot back with you from Finland, I believe.
Brian is afraid of my notes that I've written. I'll go through them as quick as I can. But yeah, I thought it would be interesting to just some of the takeaways that I got from our just a few days in Finland, and I guess taking the temperature of the industry there. I think one of the things that I took away is that, and this is a general global trend, as probably are a few of these, companies are looking outside of mobile, and obviously Finland and Helsinki are very well known for their super successful mobile companies. Obviously, they have Remedy as well, and other companies like that. But obviously, Rovio, Supercell, and now you've got like a Metacore. And so it's kind of interesting to see that they're either going cross-platform or they're just looking at new platforms. I think I'm not saying that all these companies are going to ditch mobile. That is not the case, I don't think. But that increasingly they see opportunities, I think, on PC. And it's kind of for some of the reasons that we went through earlier. It's, I imagine it anyway, it's like the 30% fee, ATT. There was some other things that people have been talking about. I think, I guess, again, it's like Survive to 25. we'll see what that brings for mobile next year and how bullish people are in the area. But then, you know, there's loads of games in soft launch as well. So it's actually quite exciting. So those are two of the other trends there, right? Survive to 25 was a massive kind of feeling there. There's a lot of struggle. People recognize that. Some companies are still doing pretty well. You know, Supercell is actually, Brawl Stars has grown like crazy. So some companies there are getting through it, but there are other companies that are really finding it challenging. One of the interesting things was there's less game support now in Finland and Helsinki. So they've had a new government and they don't want to invest so much in games now, after many years of helping grow the local industry.
That's I think interesting. They're actually feeling that, are they? They've been told as much. The money is drying up.
There is, I can't remember exactly what fund Sodorna's saying because I get it wrong. But yeah, like the government fund. But yeah. It's drying up, basically, or dried up. And it's, I guess the feeling is that maybe the new powers that be don't like games, or, and you could argue this is maybe reasonable or not, depending on your opinions, but that maybe games have had their funding, they've grown quite a big industry there, and they're now going to put money into other businesses, other sectors that they want to grow rather than games.
Right.
A real shame now that it happens for games right when it's the most challenging time it's probably ever in mobile right now. So I think there, yeah, some sore feelings there that's happened. And I guess I don't know when that will come back. I think this wasn't like a massive trend, but I think there's a little bit of wariness of acquisitions that I think, namely the Playtika and Seriously situation, I think is a bit raw there. So obviously Playtika acquired Seriously, and then that studio is now closed. The IP Best Fiends is still going, but the studio itself that was working on it before is no longer exists. Like I kind of touched upon, I make it all kind of sound a bit like doom and gloom. It's not the case, really. But there are clearly issues. But there are, like I said, super successful companies. And there are new startups, I think, are starting to emerge. And those startups are backed by very experienced local developers, right? So you're still getting I think 10 years ago, Helsinki was the startup capital for mobile in the world. That's kind of been overtaken, places like Istanbul. But there are still startups kind of coming out, and hopefully we'll see those as a success. Lastly, I'm getting there. Lastly, the community is actually still very strong. I know it's like maybe almost a cliche at this point that it's a very tight-knit games community in Finland, but when you're there, you really see it, that they do kind of give each other feedback. They do help each other out. And you can even see that with the IGDA out there. And I think IGDA, they were saying, is the biggest chapter in the world there's some context, like I think in the US, technically the chapters are split between states. And that, if you're wondering why Finland is the biggest, that's partly why. But they really help each other out, and they kind of help bring each other to events as well. Well, if you're like in different cities and that, which you probably don't get as much in other countries. So you've still got this camaraderie. There are other challenges, you know, as the industry is getting bigger, maybe some of that is starting to get lost. And then other challenges like the junior staff trying to find work and issues with immigration were some of the challenges. But yeah, it was a very interesting week. And Survive to 25 is very much a thing there, but still a lot of success happening as well.
Yeah, I just hope there's enough fun and excitement to be had in the rest of 24. We're only in April. It's the idea of battening down the hatches right now. I'm a bit disappointed. Go on. I want something new before January the 1st, 2025. I hope. Fingers crossed.
Squadbusters.
Yay. I've been waiting a year. Come on, fellas.
Very true. It's really interesting to hear you say that, Craig, because I think it's indicative. You know, Finland and Helsinki specifically has really been at the forefront of taking games seriously in Europe. And from the outset, the Finnish government seemed to have made the decision that games are tech. And so everything that they've done to support the rest of the tech world, games have directly benefited from in a way which is harder to see in other regions, especially here in the UK, where you know, a lot of the big grown-up industries like cyber, fintech, AI, etc. are getting taken very seriously. A lot of time and resources, and games are still seen as somehow other. So it's great to hear, but I'm with you 100%. The community, the kind of the sense of belonging in and around Helsinki and across the whole of Finland for all the companies working in games is incredible. The very best of luck to them. Fingers crossed it continues to be a guiding light and a beacon for us all as we move forward into whatever 2025 brings, despite what you might say, Daniel. But that brings us on to you. What have you got for us?
Yeah, last bit from me. I just wanted to return to the Apple allowing retro games. It comes down to a very, very minor amendment to their policy number 4.7, I think it was, that clarifies the fact that you are allowed to create retro games, and retro game stores that host retro games are potentially coming to iOS. Couched in that is a leaning that you need to prove that you own everything, which in the world of retro games is super hard. So, but it's safe to say that the first people that could well be doing this are the big platform holders famous arcade games, the likes of your Capcoms and your Namcos, perhaps, could have an app, can have a store on there where you can buy games, and they can adapt things for touch screens. But it's the sort of thing you've been seeing on Play for quite a while, and Android phones. But we've kind of missed out a bit on iOS. It's a debatable as to how much of a fabulous free for all it's going to be. There are still lots of legal caveats and hoops to jump through to make sure that you've got stuff. I, being of a certain age, I was always slightly disappointed that retro games, wherever they did exist, tended to be on Android. Purely by the nature of sort of being able to sideload things and get things on cheekily. So I hope that there is enough folks that own enough rights and have enough permissions to actually sort of make this venture worthwhile. And I'm keen to see what you can get. But yeah, Apple's policy on, oh, this looks a bit legally loopy. I let's just ban the whole thing so that nobody can get us into trouble. Was a bit hardcore. But yeah, with the walls coming down, it just felt like another USP for the Play Store, really. So yeah, they've stepped up and can make it happen. Debatable as to how many folks other than myself are quite excited by this. I don't know, but just think about it. Arcade games, old arcade games, they're basically the ultimate casual game, aren't they? You know, left, right, fire, over and over again. You know, what could be better? This is where casual and hyper casual started. So maybe they might win some new friends. So yeah, when retro games appear, when retro game stores there, I'll be there shoveling my 10 pences into it, albeit virtually. What do you guys feel? Are you the big retro gamers? Are there any of you folks?
This story made me laugh, to be honest, as it was going around. Maybe I misunderstand how some of it works, but that Apple was saying, we're going to allow emulators on the store. And everyone's like, that's amazing. Oh, it's so good. Thank you, Apple. But it has to adhere to local laws. So basically, you can't release an emulator on the App Store, was my takeaway.
You're
not allowed.
You can't do it in the classic one, which is I create my own emulator and then you bring the ROMs, which is wherever you got the ROMs from, and we won't ask. And there's that fabulous grey area with the world of ROMs, where if you own the cartridge stroke disc, then you can arguably say, well, I've already bought this game, so I'm allowed to play it on an emulator. Something which has sort of never been particularly tested. So yeah, this thing, it's not going to be quite the free for all, but it's a start. And I hope there are enough rights holders with enough time and energy to make some lost classics appear on iOS. But yeah, the idea of that being brilliant, there is a Super Nintendo emulator, and now you can populate it with hundreds of games. Nintendo might be able to do that, but you know, debatable as to whether they want to take anyone away from their own retro stores on Switch. So
Nintendo lawyers must just have their like head in their hands, like, oh god, really?
Well, it's either that or they're
we got to deal with this now.
It's either head in the hands or they're fabulously excited and ready to pounce. But
probably fabulously excited that they're going to get a lot of money.
Yeah, I just
having to take on all these cases.
I just hope that something worthwhile makes it through the moving goalposts. And I can buy it, but yeah, there's loads of games that I want to play again. So I hope they make it.
It's a really, really interesting point, and it's one that the games industry as a whole has never really been comfortable with. You know, the fact you can go out and buy books or watch movies or listen to music that was released decades, sometimes centuries ago. And the games world has never really been comfortable getting to grips with this, because the focus is always on the new content and getting things. You know, I'm sure I'm not dating myself too much if I say, do you remember when pre-owned games were a thing? And we had all the big labels, all the big sort of publishers telling us that buying pre-owned games was killing the games industry. You were literally taking dollars out of games developers' mouths and you were killing the games industry. The same way home taping killed the music sector, as did Napster, etc., etc., etc. I have some quite strong feelings on this. And the whole use of emulators, I think, is a means to an end, which is there's a lot of people out there who want to play old games that aren't necessarily available anymore. And it's not inconceivable that this could be solved. You know, I've worked on a whole bunch of games that people keep coming back to me and saying, are you ever going to bring back Body Harvest or Space Station Silicon Valley or, you know, some of the old DMA stuff? And I'm like, literally no idea, not in my hands, don't even know who owns the IP. And I think, as a sector, we can do better than that. You know, there are so many fantastic old games, and we're talking millions and millions. And at the moment, we're kind of reduced to skulking around and pretending that, yes, I own the disc, and the fact I have the original Lemmings on disc means that I can play the emulated copies. It's doing the players a disservice, and it's doing, I think, the original developers a disservice. And it's something that I think we can and should maybe have more of a, you know, an industry-wide discussion about. You know, if you have IP, you're not doing anything with it, the code is sitting there, what can you do to bring it back? How can you put it into the hands of the people who clearly want to play it and love it? You know, let's be creative.
It's interesting, like music passes into the public domain after, I think it's 50 years in America and maybe longer here. Maybe I've got that wrong way around. But yeah, and yeah, various IP, you know, yeah, it's in the public now, so you can do what you like with it. Yeah, games does not apply, and quite how you would implement that and how many years you would say before your game is now free, I don't think that would go down very well with certain folks. But yeah, the issues as to who owns what and who's got the rights to what is at the end of the day, it all becomes too complicated for it to be worth your while to make real. But yeah, I hope somebody somewhere gets some old stuff safely through and onto iOS anyway. So just so we can play it again without having to skulk around or you know, install nefarious software. Yeah, but yeah, this little glimmer from Apple, I feel, is the certainly for iOS at least, is the first opening of the chink of the door.
What I would like to see is, and it is slightly different, so a bit harsh to criticize Apple here, but if they're going to open up to emulation, I hope they're thinking internally, okay, well, how can we, I doubt it's linked up this way, how can we get old iPhone games that are no longer compatible with the latest operating systems, or games that leave Apple Arcade, how can we get those still available to play? Because at the moment, after a few years, when a game is no longer compatible with the new operating system, there's no point in a developer spending money to update it, because it just doesn't make them, it's not worth it for them. And then these games just get lost, like, forever. So I guess it is a bit of a different issue, but two sides of the same coin, maybe.
It would be interesting if there was, yeah, some little bit of iOS where you could play, at least play what you've bought forever, because it could maybe just go off and emulate. But
maybe someone will release an emulator for old iPhone games, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. That'd be awful if they kicked that out. Everyone would go, no, mate, don't do that. It's a good, that would be a good thing. That would be a great place to start. It would be a really good test case.
It would indeed. It would indeed. And that, sadly, folks, has brought us to the end of the latest version of The Week in Views. So thank you so much for taking the time to pull together all of the key stories from the week. As always, everyone out there listening, do please get in touch. Let us know if you're out there, if there's anything you would like to hear, anything you want to comment on across any of our podcasts. The email address is podcast@pocketgamer.biz. And wherever you're listening to this, leave us a like, leave us a review. Every little helps and helps us get the news out there and reach more and more people. So we appreciate you joining us, and we look forward to speaking to you again next time. And until then, goodbye.